is Hyperspace Theology, exploring what we can know about life and faith and God Almighty through a galaxy far, far away.
Welcome to Hyperspace Theology, a show in which we are exploring theology through the lens of a galaxy far, far away. From belief to redemption, orthodoxy to resurrection, the Star Wars galaxy is jam-packed with theological themes, and we're going to crack them wide open. Hopefully this can be of help to you in your journey of faith, or at the very least, can enhance your appreciation for the galaxy we all know and love. I'm your host, Jared Mays, and joining me once again this week is fresh off of falling down the stairs, Dr. Kevin Burr. didn't warn you about that one.
You did not. No, I literally did fall down the stairs a couple of Sundays ago and knocked a basketball-sized hole in my wall at the bottom.
That's how big his head is if you're listening on audio.
Right, yeah, that's exactly right. But the wall and myself are all fine.
I got to church that Sunday morning and saw our other co-host here, Mr. Scott Howland. I saw him and said, did you hear what happened to Kevin? And was just thrilled to tell him about your injuries. It wasn't even during the prayer request segment of church, but we're glad he's here, ready to talk Star Wars, ready to talk about Christian theology. Scott, it is now official. It's out there in the world that I'm moving away. We're no longer going to go to church together. We're just going to be Zoom friends. Kind of sad, but I'm grateful that we've got this way to connect. What about you?
I'm very happy we can still connect in this way. I'd be lying if I said I wasn't a little sad that you're moving away and won't be able to see you on Sundays, but at least we can still keep in touch.
Well, I really hope, Scott, you know, you'd be the vocal person at church who asks, you know, as people are coming in to try out if they're going to end up filling my position. Just ask one key question, Star Wars or Star Trek? And if the answer is Star Trek, check the no box on the feedback form on did you like this person?
Yeah, you can tell them to boldly go somewhere else.
You can say, get behind me, Satan. That's right. I don't actually advise saying that to people unless you're like really ready for it. That's for sure.
Didn't you tell us an anecdote not that long ago? I think maybe in our last episode or two, where you were going to say that to someone and your wife gently advised you not to.
Yeah. I didn't. I have not yet said it, but it's in my holster.
I'm proud of you.
Locked and ready to go. That's right. As a Texan. Certainly. Well, if you are anything like me, my daily drive to take my daughter to school involves the kids in the backseat yelling Christmas anytime they see any kind of Christmas decorations. We do this with every single holiday during Halloween. If there's Halloween decorations, they yell pumpkin. Eventually, by the time we get to school, I say, it's enough. I get it. It's Christmas. There's 10 Santas on that porch. Congratulations. Hey, here the point is simply this. It's Christmas time. If you're listening to this in the future, recording this in December 2021, and this episode, this Christmas-themed episode, is going to be coming down your chimneys in just, or I guess just, you know, on your podcast platforms in just a few days. Very excited to have a Christmas-themed episode. We turned over the reins, if you will, to Dr. Kevin Burr for this episode's topic, Star Wars Meets Christmas. Kevin, what do we have?
So there is what seems like almost kind of a throwaway line. That might be an exaggeration, but at the moment you don't really feel the weight of it. But there's a line, I believe in episode one, where it's said that Anakin, could he be the child that fulfills the prophecy of the one who will bring balance to the Force? There is some discussion, and you know, Obi-Wan alludes to that same thing in episode three, right there don't tell me the name of the planet. Anyway, the lava planet. Sorry, I forget.
Mustafar.
Yeah, it'll be Mustafar.
Yeah, thank you. For some reason, the only thing that was coming to mind had nothing to do with Star Wars. It was a Doctor Strange character. I don't know why.
Kevin, I'd like to imagine every single listener driving down the road just wrecked their cars because they were so focused on screaming Mustafar at you.
Yeah. And almost like your children in the back seat. Mustafar!
Christmas.
So they're on Mustafar, right? Even Obi-Wan alludes to the prophecy. You were supposed to bring balance to the Force, not leave it in shambles, that kind of thing. Jesus is also the subject of prophecy. And so I wanted to dig into this because here at Christmas time, where, you know, Christians celebrate the birth of Jesus in various ways, I thought, okay, we have two characters who are central to their stories, and their prophecies alluded to and surrounding their births. How can we make sense of this? You know, what are similarities and differences and things like that? So that's kind of where we're going to go tonight.
Yeah, tremendous overlap in that regard. It's almost like George Lucas was building off of templates from major world religions when he
one would think
Star Wars.
Joseph Campbell certainly was.
Yeah, right. Now, one tremendous departure, of course, that we've got to talk about here, which is that Jesus didn't fall to the dark side.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's the biggest difference in all of this. Nevertheless, we can spend some time on the events surrounding Jesus' birth, as it relates to, you know, Anakin having this mysterious parentage as well, which is funny because the other day, my 3-year-old had a really insightful question, which was, who are Santa's parents?
Oh, wow.
And I said, pretty sure there's a movie that addresses that one. The old school Santa Claus is coming to town. Yeah. So I was like, just
he was an
this.
Orphan.
Oh, so we still
he
don't
was
know.
An orphan. So left on a stoop with a little tag that said Claus.
Oh, is that right? I turned on the movie, yes, and then went to cook dinner. So I don't know what happened. But
I might have that more memorized than Star Wars.
Wow.
From my childhood. So
we've been doing the wrong podcast this whole time.
Yeah.
To do the Claymation meets Star Wars podcast next.
Yeah.
Well, that is a tremendous amount of overlap, Kevin. Where did you want to go with this? Start with Anakin or start with Jesus?
I feel that I'm a little bit more equipped to start with Jesus.
Okay, fine by me.
And I would be happy to toss to you guys, digging some into the prophecy surrounding Anakin's birth. When you look at the New Testament, particularly the first and third books of the New Testament, the Gospel of Mark and the Gospel of Luke, those are the two gospel accounts where we actually have some discussion of Jesus' birth. And the Gospel of Matthew and the Gospel of Luke have pretty different accounts. Luke's,
yeah,
is rightly described by some preachers and teachers as almost kind of a musical, because people are breaking out in song. But if you've ever been moved to the depths of your soul to express appreciation and gratitude for something, it makes sense that one would break out into song. I mean, that, you know, that's something that religious people, particularly Christians, experience, I think, you know, with some regularity. The Gospel of Matthew's account, on the other hand, is like a almost kind of like a dark, not necessarily a mystery, but it's fraught with danger and peril.
You're blowing my mind. I've never considered the difference in the two stories.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
It's
oh,
it is.
Now I know what I'm preaching next week.
Right, yeah.
Oh, no, I've got to finish my sermon series on Joshua. Oh, no. I guess I have to stay one more week, Kevin.
So here's your plug,
Scott,
right?
Scott, Joshua. You got me one more week. There it is.
Joshua is simply the Old Testament name for Jesus, because they're the same name, essentially.
Is.
Yeah. So just like give 3 minutes of wrap up with Joshua, and then say, but it actually prefigures Jesus, and there you go.
Who was born in a manger.
No, but the There's several things that the Gospel of Matthew in particular is really good at going into some detail about the kinds of things that foretold or anticipated Jesus' birth.
Focuses very heavily on the prophecy.
Yes, very much so. And so one of the main ones there, there's this section beginning in Matthew chapter 1, verses 18 through 25. There's this section here where we get an incredible statement about Jesus. And it's related to a statement uttered 700 plus years earlier from an Old Testament book, an Old Testament figure known as the prophet Isaiah. People are familiar with this, sort of generally familiar with this, where in the Gospel of Matthew, he quotes, "Look, the virgin shall conceive and bear a son, and they shall name him Emmanuel," which means God with us.
Yeah.
So what's interesting about that, that particular thing is, it's tempting to read the Old Testament, and even though it's much longer than the New Testament, it's tempting to read it just for these little snippets like this that point us to Jesus. We lose so much of the Old Testament's significance, Old Testament or First Testament, whichever you want to call it. We lose so much of that significance when we just kind of hunt for the pieces that we think are interesting instead of really getting a sense for kind of what's going on here.
It's like if you just eat all the M&Ms out of the trail mix. It's not good for you.
You need some of the extra complementary flavors to really pull out the whole richness of the thing. Yeah. So, Isaiah, the book of Isaiah in the Old Testament, chapter 7. Isaiah has been told to go to a particular king. And the king is concerned because there are some enemies of Israel threatening his kingdom. And God tells Isaiah the prophet, go and tell this king that you do not need to worry about these guys. And so there's this whole back and forth between them. And then Isaiah says, look, there's this woman in your own household who will bear a son. And she will name that son Emmanuel, which is just Hebrew for the phrase God with us. And he shall grow up, I'm paraphrasing, he'll grow up, and by the time he knows basically how to choose between right and wrong, like by the time that he's a young boy, these people who are bothering you, these kings from the north who are bothering you, will no longer be a threat to you. And in the passage there in Isaiah, that's the statement.
Right. It's its immediate meaning.
It has immediate meaning to them. Otherwise, if it were only just about Jesus, then what Isaiah is telling him is this. Look, King Ahaz, don't worry about these guys bothering you because 700 years from now, the Messiah will be born.
That's right.
Yikes, man. Yikes.
Hope you like knitting. Yeah.
Yeah. But the fact that the child is named Emmanuel is a deep and rich statement. And it's also interesting, too, because as later people are reading this and reflecting on this, they realize Emmanuel, meaning God with us. In a sense, God was with them, these Israelites, in Isaiah's time, protecting them, delivering them from evil, from the evil that was threatening them. But as they begin to look at this, they also begin to realize, no, wait a second. God was sort of with them, but in the person of Jesus, God is with us in a way that is cosmically more significant.
Yeah.
And so this passage here in Isaiah, it has immediate application for Isaiah's time, but it also has its greatest, truest, most significant fulfillment in the person of Jesus, who, according to Jesus' own testimony and the consistent testimony of early Christians, was actually God in the flesh, God there with people. That's just one prophecy that we could look at.
Yeah,
there is something truly special. there's something truly special about Jesus. And similarly, there is something truly special about this child to be born who will bring balance to the Force, which we can get into here in just a second. Jared, sorry to interrupt you. What were you going to say?
I was going to say the big difference that I can tell is that there is one central prophecy, and I want to go into more detail on this in a second, concerning the birth of Anakin in Star Wars as the Chosen One who will bring balance to the Force. Whereas in Christian theology, there's a myriad of prophecies that all come to bear in the person of Jesus. And in fact, the way that that's been understood historically, the convergence of those prophecies in one individual is what makes Jesus so significant and so unique. He's not just another Messiah with a lowercase m, but the Messiah, the Son of God. And that's what's so remarkable about Jesus, is that he is the new David. He's the one who will give the law like Moses. He's the one who is pierced for our transgressions. And as you've drawn our attention to, he's God with us.
Yeah.
He will be among us in a way like we had never anticipated.
I think it's interesting. Go ahead.
I was going to say, Scott, do you have a favorite particular what would we call these, Kevin? Messianic prophecies?
Yeah.
You have a specific that appeals to you more than
I'm
others.
I'm not really as well versed in the Old Testament type stuff as I do, the New Testament. So, yes.
You've been dieting on M&Ms there, Scott.
And that's obviously a failing of mine.
Proverbial M&Ms.
And revisit. But
happens to the best of us.
I think I've spent more time trying to interpret what he says than what people were saying about him coming and stuff.
Well, nothing wrong with that. Nothing wrong with that. One of the big debates, and I'm interested in you guys in your take on this. One of the big debates I've become aware of in recent years is concerning the suffering servant prophecy from Isaiah 52 and 53. If you guys have this, if you're not driving, listeners, if you're at home, now would be a good chance to open up your Bibles. In Isaiah 53, it begins in chapter 52, but what I'm going to read comes from chapter 53. There's this prophecy concerning the suffering servant. And I didn't know until recently that this was not widely interpreted to be concerning the Davidic Messiah, the one who would restore the kingdom to Jerusalem, the one that is often spoken of during Jesus' ministries. If you're reading through the Gospels, where especially people are anticipating and they're excited about Jesus as the Messiah and ready for some kind of revolution. I think about the passage at the beginning of Acts, where even after Jesus has died, been buried, and raised from the dead, there's still these disciples in Acts chapter 1 who are saying, is now the time that you're going to restore the kingdom to Israel?
Yeah.
Now looks, Jesus, like we've got some momentum here. It'd be a good time for revolution. Let's turn on the Beatles song and overthrow Caesar, right? But it wasn't until Jesus came and was present and then died that people came to realize, and obviously Christian theology in the years to come, came to realize that Jesus was not simply another David, wasn't just going to wear a crown and sit on a throne. He wasn't going to restore a political empire, but that he would be pierced. That this Davidic Messiah who was to come was also the same one who's prophesied in Isaiah 53 as the suffering servant. I wonder if this is something either of you had ever thought about, that in its Old Testament context, there's no evidence that this is referring to the same person as, Emmanuel from earlier in Isaiah that Kevin just read for us, or even, this new David who's all throughout the Psalms in particular. So let me read this passage. Isaiah 53, I will start in verse 3. He was despised. I'm sure listeners will be familiar with this passage. Despised and rejected by men, a man of sorrows, acquainted with grief, as one from whom men hide their faces. He was despised, and we esteemed him not. Surely he has borne our griefs and carried our sorrows, yet we esteem him stricken, smitten by God, and afflicted. But he was pierced for our transgressions. He was crushed for our iniquities. Upon him was the chastisement that brought us peace, and with his wounds we are healed. And there's so much more in this passage. Led like a lamb to the slaughter. I'm not going to read every last verse. Scott, let me start with you, because I want to hear, you know, Kevin's scholarly interpretation on this. But Scott, I'm interested, how is it that Jesus, in his dying, in his giving his life, we're obviously at Christmas time focused on Jesus coming, but that this is all wrapped up in who this one is, who's born and is God with us. Scott, had you ever considered that, you know, in an Old Testament context, this isn't something that people were putting two and two together, and that Jesus, by being crucified, is opening people's eyes to the idea that
not directly,
all these prophecies
but
somehow, you know, are about
as
the
I'm
same
mulling
person.
All this stuff over,
is it something you'd ever consider
before? It seems
before?
To be more that people were searching for that leader. To use a sports analogy, they were looking for their Tom Brady that leads them to victory, instead of a running back that can just get them along and get them through the game. You know, they're looking for that one quick strike of we're gonna win, and I don't think they understood what the win.
I tracked with like half of it.
No, I got you, Scott. Yeah, that makes sense.
There's always something that doesn't work.
It seemed
work
to
in
be that
that's what I tell
people
when
were looking
they start
for their
to
own
throw the,
vision
the
of what
the
Messiah would be, instead of what they needed. You know, what would suit their own ends and their own means and their own egos about, okay, this will restore us. This will get us back to glory, instead of. And what their idea of that glory was, instead of what the true glory that Jesus showed us was.
Yeah. Absolutely. That's why in recent years, when I look at a manger scene, a nativity scene set up, you know, in downtown Lemonster where I live, or in somebody's yard, I think, you know, obviously it's easy to accept baby Jesus. A lot harder to consider the implications of the Savior who gives his life and demands we take up our cross to follow him, to die with him, and give up everything. I look at these scenes and I'm overcome with all this theological nuance, and to realize it's so much easier to accept the Messiah in our own image than it is to really soak into what these prophecies are saying about Jesus. You want to weigh in on this one, Kevin?
Scott is exactly right that when you look at other Jewish writings around the time of Jesus' life and ministry, there was a variety of interpretations of what God's chosen one, God's anointed one, which is what the word Messiah means. It means someone specially selected, anointed one, which is...
Yeah, Christ was not Jesus's last name.
Right. And so Messiah is the Hebrew word for anointed one. Christ is the Greek word for anointed one. And so the two titles mean the same thing. So in a Jewish mind, the anointed one could mean many things, often some kind of glorious military figure who, like his ancestor David before him, 1,000 years ago, had the largest, most expansive kingdom that Israel had ever known. And so there was hope that this figure, sometimes referred to as the son of David, not literally in the sense of his biological son, but son descended from David, and also someone characterized by the kinds of conquering that David would have done, there was a hope that this person would do these kinds of things. It is interesting, too, to note that as Jesus is routinely referred to as the chosen one or the anointed one, Anakin is also called the chosen one. Is he not right there in Mustafar? Obi-Wan's yelling at him, "You were the chosen one," right?
Oh, I hadn't considered the kind of similarities of terms, because we have these loaded terms in Christian theology.
Right.
We don't use the term chosen one to refer to Jesus. We might say, I mean, you have to be fairly in the weeds to even know that anointed one is what Messiah means.
Yeah. I wonder if Jesus was the anointed one who did things in a way that that completely baffled people around him and subverted the expectations. If we're going to talk about Star Wars, it's appropriate to talk about subverting expectations. He subverted expectations.
Sure, especially with the Chosen One, that's got a lot of revisionist history with it.
Yeah, yeah. And I wonder if I wonder how exactly did Anakin? I mean, Qui-Gon talks about it, something being the will of the Force. I can't remember if he. It's been a while since I've seen Episode One. I should have reviewed. But I think it's in reference to the birth of Anakin.
Right.
No. He said conceived by the Force about Anakin, the enslaved boy, a person whose name is Anakin. But he also talks about how it was the will of the Force for them to meet Anakin. And so I wonder if the Force does actually have a will, what was the will of the Force? What was the Force's will in, like, how Anakin would have brought balance to the Force? Does that make sense? Does that question make sense as I've posed it kind of awkwardly?
Yeah, what exactly does that mean for this chosen one to bring balance to the Force?
How would he have done that?
There's been a ton of debate over what that means.
Yeah.
I think but if you're looking at
somebody else take it away, because I'm kind of rambling now.
You look at the people who were surrounded Jesus, and a lot of them were naysayers. I don't know, maybe not naysayers, but a lot of them, seeing his deeds, still didn't believe in him. And a lot of the council for the Jedi didn't believe in Anakin, and they never gave him. His disciples gave him more support than the council did, but there was so much that where Anakin was left without a father, a strong hand, you know, of a father. He had a brother, and so he wasn't led as strongly as probably Jesus was, having at least a father figure in his life.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot we could talk about with that, for sure. Maybe we'll come back to it. And there's so many overlaps. You know, you mentioned a parallel there. I'm really hung up on Kevin's question. Maybe it would help for us to hear what the Chosen One prophecy in Star Wars may have been.
Sure.
And we'll flesh this out a little bit more.
Do you have it there?
I did some deep diving. All right. So this is an idea that originates from George Lucas that comes up, as you said, at the top of the show, referenced in Episode One. Comes up all throughout the prequel trilogy. Then, as we get to the sequels, obviously, there's been some debate in the last few years concerning, is it overwritten? Is it undercut by Rey? Is Rey the Chosen One? There's a lot of debate about, is Luke the Chosen One? Now, there is no actual reference to the explicit prophecy. It's not like there is an Old Testament we can open to and actually read the text of the Chosen One prophecy. However, ever the book nerd that I am, within the last few years, in canon content, right, canon storytelling for Star Wars, in a book called Master and Apprentice. So this is approved by Lucasfilm. This comes, you know, it's from the source until they override it, that is. But at the moment, this is the official canon text of the prophecy. And, guys, I didn't tell you about this before the show. I have an audio clip. So I'm going to play a segment of the audiobook, Master and Apprentice by Claudia Gray, where Qui-Gon Jinn himself is reading in the archives the Chosen One prophecy.
Several minutes later, Qui-Gon sat next to Rael in the Jedi archives, looking at the one and only holocron that had ever interested him. The one that held the ancient prophecies. Some were majestic, some were mysterious. A few seemed laughable, but they were all fascinating. Qui-Gon kept reading, unable to stop. Only through sacrifice of many Jedi will the Order cleanse the sin done to the Nameless. The danger of the past is not past, but sleeps in an egg. When the egg cracks, it will threaten the galaxy entire. When the Force itself sickens, past and future must split and combine. A chosen one shall come, born of no father, and through him will ultimate balance in the Force be restored.
The ancient mystics... All right, so that's it. The chosen one shall come... I didn't memorize it already. I'm too busy trying to memorize, you know, the entire Bible to memorize all these Star Wars books. I'm not trying to do that.
So I guess the question would be,
shall come, born of no father.
The question would be, through him, does that mean his offspring, Luke?
Scott, is that
or that he would do it directly himself? You know, I guess that's where some of the gray area would be.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah, and there is gray area. However, George Lucas himself has gone on the record by saying, no, it's Anakin. Anakin, all the way. There's no other way to look at it. It's Anakin. So straight from the mouth of GL himself.
My question is,
does clear the ambiguity.
Similar was the a lot of the upbringings? Because when you see Anakin, and he's not exactly a humble child. You know, he seems to be pretty, you know, very opinionated, if you ask me. Like he's like, okay, well, this is the way it is. He doesn't seem to be, you know, I can't think of the way I'm trying to explain it, but he seems to be, and it seems to get worse as he goes on about when, once he's like told he's the chosen one, he seems to get a little bit of an arrogance about it.
He's much more pure-hearted as a child. He becomes aware of the idea that he could be,
I guess,
the chosen one.
That could be
prophecy,
a tale of
his head, right?
You know, a chosen one gone wrong. A chosen one who starts to believe his own press instead of being a leader that he is, just saying, "Well, this is how it should be," and you know, taking the wrong messages from that.
This is something I spent a lot of time thinking about today, which is how is it that Anakin becoming aware of the prophecy and all of the hype surrounding him being the chosen one, and obviously, you know, in the books, there's so much among his other classmates feeling either jealous of him or resentful of him, where Anakin then is unable to develop many close relationships with his peers, where he... And Obi-Wan don't have a great
Obi-Wan even says
kind of
that they were brothers.
He might have had
they
that were, with
they
Qui-Gon.
They never had
that was taken
Anakin,
from him.
I don't think, really had that strong father figure, that strong person who could really instill in him, you know, right and wrong, you know, that kind of sense.
And I was thinking today about how much was Jesus aware of what people thought of him growing up. The only passage we have in all of Scripture about Jesus growing up years is Luke 2, Jesus, boy, 12-year-old Jesus, being brought to the temple and being able to hold his own in debate with scholars at the temple. Jesus, obviously somebody who was really dedicated to studying and knowing Scripture. That's it. That's all we have. And I wonder how much did his family talk about the events surrounding his birth. You know, how much of this, you know, every time we have a birthday, do you guys have the same tradition? When your kids have a birthday, you tell them the story of when they were born? Is this just a thing that we do?
No, my kids are like 5 and 2, though, so it wouldn't matter.
Our kids
to them.
Love to hear the story. When our oldest daughter was born, I almost ran over an old lady. We were getting to the hospital, and was an old lady crossing the crosswalk, and I felt this tremendous sense of urgency, and I rolled down the window and screamed at her, "I'm not stopping. I'm not stopping." You know, and so my kids, they just cackle and they think. But I wonder, how much with Jesus was he aware of these stories? And why is it that they did not go to his head?
No, that's kind of what I was saying about the Anakin. It seemed to get into his head. So so that leads to a lot of the questions of how was Jesus able to avoid those kind of machinations,
right.
You know?
Yeah.
He really seems like he had a pretty clear sense of his mission. In the passage to which Jared alluded just a moment ago, Jesus says to his parents, "I needed to be about my Father's business," essentially. And it just seems kind of matter of fact. Like, well, I mean, like, this is why I'm here. Y'all know this. Like, this is why I'm here. And the way that Luke presents it, it's not intended to be like, duh, Mom, get with the program. Like, he's not a jerk about it. It's just very matter of fact. It's like, yeah, this is why I'm here. This is what I need to do.
Maybe he even had a clearer sense of mission surrounding who of his own identity than his family had for him.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to think of the passage where we learned that even some of Jesus' closest family members doubted who he really was. Obviously, John the Baptist has a period of doubt. I think it's in John, I'll look for it here, where Jesus is kind of out on his own. Even his family, who would know the story, they would have doubts, right? But Jesus doesn't waver.
Yeah, it is interesting. His family comes and they think he's crazy, and they don't. His brothers don't buy into everything. Yeah. You mentioned Scott. I think Scott mentioned earlier about just kind of musing on the differences between Anakin, who might have ended up wrongly buying into his own press, versus Jesus, who I think we could say had a clear sense of self and therefore a clear sense of mission. There's a couple of ways we could go with that. The Clone Wars TV show does a really good job at showing how it seems like the Jedi did not have a clear sense of mission.
Okay.
And so Anakin was, I think, arguably steeped in a culture and a community
that
had lost its own way, maybe to some degree.
Yeah.
What's her name? Is it Barriss Offee? The girl who's
the truth telling Padawan,
The girl who's friends with Ahsoka, who ends up, spoiler alert, if you haven't watched near the end of the Clone Wars, the girl who ends up turning to the dark side, right? Padawan ends up turning to the dark side, it's Barriss Offee.
Yeah, but she took the red pill, right? She knows what's really going on.
Right, yeah. But like she ends up prefiguring Anakin. I mean, who Anna's, says, well, in my perspective, it's the Jedi who are evil, right? And that dynamite line from episode 3.
Brilliant writing.
But it's essentially the same thing. I mean, it's essentially the same perspective. Jesus, on the other hand, had such a clearer sense of kind of who he was and his mission. And this might be a good time to pose this question, because this is the last question I had put on the notes that I sent to y'all about this. We've alluded to some of this before, but it might be worth digging into this. Kind of two sides to this question. What do you think could have kept Anakin from falling to the dark side? And the flip side of that is, was Jesus' temptation actually tempting? Could Jesus have actually succumbed to that those temptations? So maybe two questions to deal with here. Let's deal with the let's jump on the first one. What do you think could have kept Anakin from falling to the dark side?
Yeah, we've talked about the father figure. If he had had a different master, as much as Obi-Wan is the golden boy of the Jedi, may not have been the most appropriate master for such a headstrong, powerful, unorthodox Jedi.
That's definitely Dave Filoni's perspective.
Is it? Okay.
Yeah. In The Mandalorian, in one of those, I think he talks about Anakin. Qui-Gon being more of a father, Anakin, or Obi-Wan being more of a brother. Sorry to talk over you, Jared.
No, you're good. I do want to handle this one sensitively, though. There's so much to be said about the power of being raised in a stable family with both a mother figure and a father figure.
Sure.
And as a Christian who believes in God's model for family, I think that there is a lot of good there. I also want to be sensitive to the fact that a lot of people have to, for whatever reason, whether it's by choice or by tragedy, to have an unorthodox family, but to raise children who are not their own, or to raise children single-handedly with working 2-3 jobs, and that a lot of good can come out of that, good people, and that's often a model of selfless sacrifice and service. All of that being said, Anakin sure could have benefited from some more stability.
That's
you know, he's
a
always
little
on
bit
the
what
road.
I was going to say is he needed
a child slave.
He's serving
soldier.
At that time, and I think that also does him a disservice, along with the fact that I believe that the Jedi Order doesn't believe in him, and they never wanted to train him to begin with. He's too old. We can't do this. No, he's not right. There was a lot of people in there who didn't believe in him and didn't want him there. They didn't even want to make him a master. They were holding him back at every time, that instead of feeding him and trying
to
nurture the quote Jedi side.
Down a bit, so
you know,
don't want to
so
be
I think that plays a part, and also like
you
said, that
the
being stabilize. On the road the whole time about.
I will say, as somebody who is about
trying
to start a new
lead
job,
these other men in battle,
you want to get started off on the right foot.
Yeah.
And I have also started jobs where you don't get started off on the right foot, and it's hard to recover when people's first impression is.
Oh,
not,
I don't know, but what?
Scott, I think we can hear you now. Go ahead.
But it, for me, it boils down to the fact that he wasn't supported.
We heard all the good parts, Scott.
within the Jedi Order itself, and then he was also okay. Well, we're not going to nurture your Jedi side, and go off and do these other things that are completely unrelated to being a Jedi. You know, being a general, leading these. All these clone troopers and stuff. I think that did him a tremendous disservice as well in not having a good foundation.
Yeah, there's a lot to be said for the fact that he was shaped by war, and war does a tremendous, tremendous number on a person.
Yeah.
Even though they're cutting down robots,
losing troops that are under your command.
He comes out with scars, literally and figuratively. Yeah. Maybe if he, maybe if he hadn't been raised in war. It is, after all, Star Wars, not Star Nurture. So you know, there's got to be some of that.
Star community.
Kevin, did you have a thought on what might have saved Anakin? Obviously, we know what does save him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think we've touched on all the points that make the most sense. Having a nurturing father figure would have been immensely helpful. And as Jared, you rightly pointed out, you know, Christianity, you know, understands God's design for a family. But you and all of us know that there are successful, honorable men out there whose biological fathers were worthless, but had others. Right. Others, often men, you know, sometimes women, to raise these young boys into men. You know, how many times, right, have you heard an a professional athlete talk about, you know, mom did everything she could to keep us.
I was actually going to mention
out
him.
Of trouble in school.
Yeah.
And I had a
Najee
coach.
Najee Harris, running back for the Pittsburgh Steelers. Absolutely.
I had a coach. Yeah. I had
yes.
a coach
All
who
right.
was, you know, who this coach, you know, taught me what it was like to be honorable, taught me what it was like to be respectable.
Yeah.
And, you know, had Mace Windu not had such a grumpy disposition, he would have been well placed to, you know, to actually help Anakin through some of these things.
What's so tragic is that one of the only father figures in Anakin's life was bent on manipulating him. And we talked a little bit about some of the parallels between Jesus and Anakin in their chosen oneness. Palpatine tempts Anakin, but Anakin doesn't know it. He doesn't.
Right.
He's not able to identify that's what's happening here. We talked a little bit in a previous episode about being able to see temptation when it's happening and name it and resist it through the power of the Spirit, whereas Anakin is so totally given into somebody who believes in him, somebody who can speak to him with this fatherly voice, whereas Jesus, when he's tempted, very shrewd of Satan in Matthew 4, we get one of the examples of where Satan tempts Jesus in the wilderness. Jesus has been fasting for 40 days, which I wouldn't advise to anybody to have go that long without food. A supernatural fast, as Gary Friesen calls it. And the very first temptation that Satan can think of is, you must be hungry.
Right.
Very deft of Jesus to realize, this sounds like a temptation. But it escalates from there. And what he offers him is a shortcut, effectively, on the cross, to say, I'll give you all power. Everything can be yours, and everyone will worship you without having to go to the cross. He doesn't use those words. But when we look at the grand picture of what's happening, that's what would be most tempting to Jesus, and Jesus resists it. That, to me, is the great defining difference between Jesus and Anakin, is Jesus sees that temptation, and he chooses.
It didn't help that.
Yeah.
Anakin, say, it didn't help Anakin that Anakin had his own secrets he was keeping. You know, his secret wedding to Padme and the fact that he was going to have a child, you know, that he was hiding from other people. I don't think that helped the case at all either.
Yeah. And now we're going to talk about Mary Magdalene. Just kidding.
The Da Vinci Code is fiction, so.
Great point. I don't think a lot of people know that, Kevin.
it's pretty tragic. Yeah. It's interesting when you compare these temptations that Jesus faced versus the temptations that Anakin faced. The temptations, I think you can ultimately boil them down to, you know, an essential component. There's probably other things you could boil it down to, but I think you can justifiably boil it down to an essential component. How does the one being tempted, how will the one being tempted use their power, basically?
Oh, yeah.
Palpatine was all about, you know, using power for, you know, seemingly personal gain. Ultimately personal gain. You know, I think he fed Anakin a bunch of lies. He fed Anakin precisely what he wanted to hear, right? Had Plagueis actually found a way to prevent death, or did Palpatine just learn that he was looking into that kind of thing and then realize that Anakin was afraid that Padme would die?
Well, now we're getting into the fun stuff. The book, Darth Plagueis, all 420 pages of it, is no longer canon. And in it, it does extrapolate on the idea, it's one of the best Star Wars books ever, extrapolates on the idea that in his quest to extend his own life eternally, he ended up accidentally manipulating midichlorians into creating life, thus creating Anakin. But then failed to be able to save his own life because he was so drunk on his own power. That's where that goes. Another interpretation, it's a little bit vague, is that the Force kicks back as Plagueis becomes so powerful and the Sith become their grand plan comes to fruition, that the Force plants the Chosen One, right? Generates life in Shmi Skywalker on Tatooine so that the Force could be balanced once again because it had become out of balance. So there's two different ways you could take that.
Okay. But essentially then, Palpatine realizes that this is what Anakin wants to hear. And so the temptation is, use my knowledge, I beg you, right? The temptation is, use this power for yourself. That's essentially
Satan's...
That's
what's so beautiful about that scene is it's so ambiguous.
Yeah.
It could mean so many things.
Yeah.
Either way, it's very clear what you're seeing is master manipulation.
Mm-hmm. The temptation of Jesus is essentially the same thing. If you are the Son of God, which is how Satan begins it, if you are the Son of God, then use your power for yourself. Hmm. But I think one of the best and most succinct descriptions of how Jesus used his power is in the Apostle Paul's letter to the Philippians, chapter 2, verses 6 through 11, where Paul describes Jesus's downward movement from being in the presence of God in heaven, downward, emptying himself of all the power and the privilege and everything that came with being there in God's presence. And, you know, to the point of horrific, gruesome death. Mm-hmm. And then, after using his power correctly, after using his power in the way that was, you know, God's vision, then he's able to resume his power, take his place enthroned over the universe. And we see essentially two very different responses to power when we look at the two side by side.
And that's, there's so much in this that's so beautiful. The only way that he could be saved was through sacrifice as well. As Luke attains tremendous power, we see him growing from, you know, barely being able to deflect lightsaber little blaster bolts on the Millennium Falcon in A New Hope to eventually overpowering the Dark Lord of the Sith in Return of the Jedi. But then he surrenders his power, throws away the saber, and that's what saves Anakin. And then Anakin in his dying breath is powerless, and that's what's so perfect about that story is that was when he was at his best, having given up everything and having accepted the salvation that came from his son, right? That's what's so beautiful about the redemption story in Star Wars, but also so beautiful about the incarnation, what we celebrate at Christmas time, is that God limits himself. He gives of his power. He's not tempted by what we're tempted by. Went through every temptation, but that's what's so incredible about Jesus' example, isn't it? Is that he can identify temptation. He can call it what it is. He can resist it, not by pulling himself up by his own bootstraps, but through humility, through clarity of focus on his identity. Jesus is so sober-minded in regardless of what went down at that wedding in Galilee and in Cana in John chapter 2. Jesus is so sober in the sense that he's unwavering in his compassion and his vision, in his truth, certainly.
Yeah.
That's great stuff. Great stuff. Scott, I want to ask you, as you consider the nativity scenes that litter Lemonster this time of year, anything that we've discussed tonight in the parallels to Anakin, the parallels to the galaxy that we all know and love, that is cause you to look a little differently on the holiday this particular year.
Jesus did have that clarity, that he did have that sense of purpose instead of getting drunk on his own power, falling into the trap. So that's just kind of my takeaway is how it could go all wrong, and it didn't.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and that's, you know, my kids are so fascinated. Any Bible story with animals is like, that's how you know this is one to teach to the 3-year-olds. You got Noah's Ark, Jonah and the great fish. You got Away in a Manger. So my kids, they're like, look here, let's play biblical animal flashcards. The donkeys, you got camels. The fact of the matter is, when I'm looking at this and talking to them about it, what I'm telling them isn't about the animals. It's about the fact that the Son of God's entrance into the world was noteworthy to some who knew to pay attention to whom it had been revealed, but in so many ways lack of fanfare. I don't want to say lackluster. What's the word I'm looking for here? Without thunderous applause, to use a Star Wars term.
Right? Without thunderous applause. Here's how the Son of God enters the world. Without thunderous applause.
Yeah, that actually might need to go in the Christmas sermon. Let me pull it up.
I like that.
Real quick. Certainly. Certainly. Well, guys, I'm grateful we've had the chance to talk about this. Obviously, there's so much more. I'm tempted to want to get into the idea that we use the word chosen one in Star Wars. Nevertheless, Anakin came from a virgin birth, right? You know, his mother, regardless of whether or not she was a virgin, the quote in The Phantom Menace is what? He has no father. He was born supernaturally. And as we talk about Jesus being the anointed one or even the chosen one, I want to be careful to avoid adoptionistic language to consider the idea that Jesus would be another person who was a good Jew, who God, you know, at adolescence thought, this might be the guy. Seems to pass the test. Let's go ahead and bring him in for an interview. There is a heretical Christian belief that says Jesus is adopted by God, eliminating both Matthew and Luke's stories of this. Would either of you want to just briefly, quickly, before we wrap up, weigh in on why it is important that we keep the virgin birth in the Bible, and why we need to avoid this idea of Jesus just being another good Jew who then becomes the Messiah later on in life? It's central to the story of Christmas.
Yeah. You have, here just, at the end of the episode,
just some easy lifting.
We can cut it if we have to. We can cut it. It's important.
Yeah. Yeah. It's important for God. It's important for God to do this in the person of Jesus. It really goes all the way back to the promises made to the Old Testament figure of Abraham, where when God creates a covenant, which is a mutually binding promise, contract of sorts, when God creates this covenant with Abraham, God is the two parties involved. I mean, Abraham is there, but God is essentially the two parties involved and says, I am faithful to keep my covenant promises. Yeah. And that lays the groundwork for centuries later, where God is now fulfilling in the most ultimate way that promise, as opposed
I think that
to
says it will. Right, as opposed to what?
Well, as opposed to a pious Jewish teenage boy who becomes picked up that way.
Yeah, we'll be careful when we say chosen one. We don't mean picked like in a dodgeball game. We mean chosen before the creation of the world, right? Before the foundation of the earth, the proto Evangelium in what is it, Genesis 3? There will be a descendant that comes from Eve, and you will crush Satan. He will crush Satan. He might strike his heel. I'm totally butchering this. While Kevin turns to it here, I can see him flipping through. I love the sound of Bible pages turning. We could just have a whole podcast that's just people flipping Bible pages, and I would listen. Regardless, the point, of course, is that God had to solve this problem himself. The problem of sin was not God's problem, but God took it on his shoulders. And that's the story of salvation. It had to come from the Son of God. It could come from no other source. Yeah, that's an important thing that...
I think the important part is the connection between both God and man.
Anything else on this, Scott?
Here, you know, it shows that God, for lack of a better term, has some skin in the game. He's not just standing up there shouting out commandments to people. He's like, I'm willing to put my money where my mouth is and give my only begotten son to you. And I think that's what's really important, is that connection.
Mm. Yeah.
Now, I think skin in the game is the best possible way to describe this.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a pun just made for a podcast, Scott. Because he gives his life. He gives his flesh. That's what we take in the Lord's Supper. I'm explaining to my three-year-old, this is not a cracker. This this is not snack time. I say, this. I held up my hand. It looks like flesh. And then she said, look at those flowers up on the stage. She saw our poinsettias. Yeah, so, like, we're not quite there yet. But that's the point. He does have skin in the game. You know who doesn't? Santa Claus. All right. How come Santa gets all the credit? All right, no, we won't go there.
I was going to say, this was not in my notes. Okay, so this is Jared. Y'all can get on to Jared for that twist.
Our three-year-old listeners are out by this point in the episode, don't you think? Well, guys, it's been an hour. I have got some presents to wrap, some lights to light. Actually, I've got to take the lights down.
I was going
to
say, you're moving. You're going to take those lights
before
down.
Before we move, I put up a very conservative amount of lights. One strand. Just one. I'm a big Christmas lights guy. It's like what Jesus says. You are the light of the world. And I just think it's important that we have some... I love Christmas lights. And regardless of if you love them or not, that does it for this week. Thank you for listening to Hyperspace Theology. We'd like to hear from you. You, of course, can submit any kind of feedback, questions, concerns, comments, or even an idea for an episode. And you can get in contact with us, hyperspace_theology@gmail.com. You can also find us, hyperspace_theology, on Instagram as well. Kevin, I've got 22 hours of driving coming up next week as I prepare to, Lord willing, migrate across the country to a new job in Arkansas. What should I be listening to in that podcast player as I drive?
I highly recommend this podcast by a guy. He's kind of funny. He's got a fair voice. His name is... Dr. Kevin Burr of Faith in the Folds, still rolling through our series on the New Testament that I mentioned last time. We've also taken a little bit of a break from that series, just a quick pause, a seasonal pause, where I interview an old friend of mine who is an author. She has written a devotional book for moms about kind of not letting the busyness of the season overwhelm you, but staying focused on what Christmas is about. And then today, at the time of recording, earlier today, I recorded an episode with a friend from my doctoral program who has done a lot of research and a lot of writing on why December 25th is the day that we celebrate Jesus' birth.
Oh, that's interesting.
And how...
The mom's one? I don't know, but definitely.
Yeah, and I ask him the question, you know, is that Big Bang Theory episode right? Was it Saturnalia and Christians just took it over? Or, you know, is there more going on here? And so we talk about all that kind of stuff. That's coming up that will debut Friday, December something. Today's the 14th, so help me with the math. This coming Friday, that'll debut as kind of a little Christmas episode. So,
good deal. Wonderful. Love it. Well, I've really enjoyed the time getting to chat with you guys. Might have a little bit of a slower release here over the next month or so as I get settled. Gonna have a new podcast studio. Gotta make sure it's soundproof and, you know, appropriately blessed and, you know, not haunted by any Sith lords or anything like that. I'm very excited about setting up. And by that, I mean, just gotta make sure it's got a microphone and internet. Am I right? Well, regardless of if you've got a microphone or internet, thank you for listening to this episode. We'll be back soon with another episode. God bless, and may the Force be with you.